And good morning. It is 10 a.m. You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, and it is time once again for the Kenai Conversation, and we are continuing this week sort of where we left off last week, meeting with candidates for Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. Of course, last week we spoke with Dale Bagley, and this week we are pleased to have in the studio with us this morning Linda Farnsworth Hutchings. Linda, so thank you so much for coming out this morning. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And we're going to get right into it this morning. The first thing we want to do is give out the number. 690-1687 is the number if you have a question. And Linda, just to get started, let's maybe meet you a little bit. For folks who don't know, you've been around the area for just a little while.
Just a little.
Just a little while.
My parents came to Soldotna in 1948, and they took a boat to Kenai and took a military 6x6 to Soldotna because there was no real road. There was no bridge over the Kenai River. And, you know, it was a very basic lifestyle when they decided to build their cabin. And it was built up on the hillside just above the map shop in Soldotna, now across from Fred Meyer. And, you know, I have my children always said, "Let's go camping, Mom." And I said, "Not going to happen." I did that for the first 5 years of my life. I like my creature comforts. So, you know, that was one of the things that I remember the most. My parents built the first service station at the Y in Soldotna because that's where their property was. They were extremely instrumental in statehood and the development of the borough. My parents served on assembly, school board, hospital board, and very, very invested. And as you know, politics can be extremely consuming. We were lucky. There were four of us kids, and my grandmother, who was an immigrant from Czechoslovakia, lived with us from the time I was a year old. So it was a very close family, but my parents had the opportunity to do things in the area and in the state because we had grandma at home. I chose a different way. I chose, because I had two children, we had Hutchings Chevrolet and nieces and nephews that came through our house frequently. I chose to work on boards and commissions. So that's how I helped my borough grow. And now my children are grown and my grandchildren are grown. And so it's time for what I feel is the right step. We need management at the borough level.
Which is a perfect dovetail into, I guess, my first real question, which is what has compelled you to decide to run for this position?
Management. You know, I don't feel that the borough mayor should be a political position. I think it is a management position, and particularly in these economic times. And having dealt with big business, I understand that. A lot of people say, well, it was just a car dealership. But a car dealership has five distinct businesses in it. You have your vehicle sales, you have your leasing, you have your parts, you have your service. You have, as I said, up to 82 employees is what we employed, with almost $2 million in payroll going into the community every year. So I worked with a lot of different people. I interviewed literally thousands of employees, and I still have an employee that's been with me for 27 years. You know, so I understand the dynamics of management. I know how to hire good qualified people, and I know how to respect those employees. So I think that's really, really important. I don't know that everybody at the borough is a great employee. I'm assuming they probably are very good employees. And the thing is that I hate to see happen at the borough level what I've seen so many times happen at the state level. You get a new administration, they can everybody and start over, and you've got that brain drain, which is really the wrong way to go about it. You need that knowledge, you need that history. So I think I'm the right person for this job.
That's something that you kind of focus on, that idea quality employees and finding, you know, ways to run things efficiently. I'm curious, in your candidate statement, you focus on those things. Are there areas where you see that those things are lacking right now, be it in terms of management or the quality of employees that are there or efficiencies that can be gained?
I don't see necessarily anything wrong with the management capabilities that we have now. I do feel that the two that are running do not have those management qualities, and that's why I am running.
What about your business background separates you from the other two candidates?
I know how to balance a budget. I mean, when you're making your own payroll checks and you're paying your property taxes for a big facility and you have to send your employees to training, we used to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on training. And you understand that, you know, you might have to give up a little here to get that, but the training is very important because that makes a better employee so you don't have to retrain an employee and keep, you know, going over and over and spending that money. So I think that that is one thing that is really my benefit.
You mentioned having a balanced budget. That's something that we don't exactly have right now. The current assembly signed off on a budget that goes into the correct me on my colors, goes into the black a little bit, about $4 million. And I guess I'll just open it up. How do we close that? How do we get over that budget gap and get back to where everything lines up on the balance sheets?
Well, first of all, I would sit down with every department head and I would go through every line item in that budget and see if there are any efficiencies. That is the first thing. And then you have to look at what services do you want to continue to provide for your constituents? And that's really a big, important thing. You can't keep giving everybody all the services if you have no way to pay for them.
That's an interesting point because, you know, that's something that past administration, this administration has looked at the borough level, and we see things. One that is pointed to often is closing down the landfill for a day. That they tried to do that to save a few dollars, and there were a lot of folks who didn't like that. They were inconvenienced by that, felt that that was a service that was necessary. And so I'm curious, and I've been asking this of everyone who's sat in that chair, is when you throw things out that seem sort of on the surface to be relatively low impact like that to try to save some money and there is blowback, does that tell you all you need to know about what cuts people want? And if not, then what cuts do you think need to be made?
Well, you know, the landfill is a very good example. We do have it closed in the winter times on a Sunday. And I have people come up to me and say, you know, I've never lived anywhere in the world that I didn't have to pay to get rid of my garbage. And in this borough, you can. So I've heard them say, you know, I don't have a problem with the inconvenience of one day of being closed.
That's one example. Are there other things that you have, having watched this sort of from the outside looking in, what are things that you've picked up? Are there other things like that that you would come in sort of on your list, not necessarily that are going to go away, but at least we're going to check out?
I'm going to check them all out.
That line item thing, right?
Yes.
Linda Farnsworth Hutchings joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you would like to get in on the conversation, give us a call at 690-1687. Again, 690-1687. And we've been speaking a little bit about the budget already, and that's, of course, a popular topic for all the candidates running for Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor, as it was, you know, a point of much debate during the budget process earlier this year. Part of that budget question may or may not be addressed at the ballot box, and I guess now is as good a time as any to get to those ballot questions, and we'll start, you know, kind of building off of that idea of how to balance the budget. One of the questions, if you are going through those line items and you find that we're where we need to be, essentially, in terms of spending, and the revenue question comes up. Well, there's a revenue question on the ballot, of course, this year, and it's to whether or not to increase the cap on sales tax per transaction, $500 up to $1,000. And I'll just open that up to you. What is your thought on that ballot proposition? Is this the right time for it? Is it going to do what's needed to be done?
I would love to see it pass because, you know, as I said, my parents were very instrumental in this development of this borough. And one of the things that they were all very cognizant of is that we had to fund our schools. And since I was a kid that went on a bus an hour and a half every morning to go to Kenai because we had no school in Soldotna, it really hit close to home. So they developed the sales tax to be funded directly to the school district. It was not used for anything else. And in 1965, to have a $500 cap seemed reasonable. And it is time to raise it to the $1,000 cap. And if you look at all the other boroughs in the state of Alaska, we are the lowest. And again, this is money that is just earmarked for schools, not for anything else.
I'm curious about that. It's interesting. You mentioned the idea that this isn't that on the Kenai Peninsula in particular, it's relatively low compared to the rest of the state. Are there other areas of the state where you can see things like that, be it the tax cap or sales tax rates or maybe the bed tax, which was a debate that we just heard a lot about? Are there other areas of the state where you look at and say, boy, they're really doing it right?
Well, yes, I have. And a good example is the bed tax and what it does for Seward. You know, Seward is kind of isolated. And sometimes I feel really bad because I wish there wasn't a 90-mile road trip to Seward, because my mom came to Alaska by coming on Alaska Steam into Seward, and Seward was a very thriving community with a hospital. We'd go there for our medical. But the thing is that they have developed a wonderful program with bed tax. They have upgraded their sewage system. They have upgraded their water system, and right now they're getting all their streets paved. And it's, you know, they have taken out some loans for that, some bonding, but it's all being paid back with bed tax because they have no other real revenue.
And so I guess maybe could you expand a little bit on your philosophy, you know, if that one's a good idea for that situation, is that something that would apply here? Or do we have other things that make up for that revenue that make a bed tax not necessary? I guess maybe just talk a little bit about your philosophy on how that tax burden ought to be spread out.
Well, you know, I sit here and I look at young moms, single moms, maybe raising a couple of kids and living in a home, and her tax bill comes due. This lady cannot afford more property taxes. But as much as I hear all of the naysayers about bed tax does not affect the people here. It helps the people here. And I just don't understand why they can't see this is sales tax that, again, goes to schools, which is very, very important. It's going to keep their lodges from having a higher mill rate, which I think would in the long run would cost them more. And I just don't see people saying, I'm not going to stay with you because you have a bed tax. I have paid bed tax all over the United States, even going to Anchorage. I mean, you have a bed tax. If we go to Seward, we have a bed tax. If we, you know, so I'm baffled by that one.
Do you ever look at your receipt from a hotel stay and notice what the percentage of the overall bill was that went to that local bed tax? Because that's something I'm always impressed that people know that number. I don't know if they actually know that number, but it's a number that's often thrown out.
That's true. And, you know, I generally don't look, but I do believe Anchorage is 12%. I do believe Seattle is something like, when you get all their taxes, it's like something like 16%. So, you know, I know I'm probably upsetting a lot of lodge owners right now, but I sit there and think property tax as opposed to bed tax, it's not going to keep the person from coming. It's just not.
So maybe then it's a question of marketing when it comes to some of these revenue decisions. It's not so much about whether or not it's something that will negatively affect folks here on the peninsula financially, but it's a marketing thing? I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's education. It's so that you can see. If you sit there and you show somebody that's got a $400,000 lodge and their mill rate is going to go up one or two mills to take care of this deficit issue, or you look at the bed tax, and the bed tax is not being paid by you. It's being paid by the customer that's coming in. And I'm going to tell you, nobody looks at that bed tax. That's just, they pay it everywhere else. They think they're going to pay it here too.
Interesting. Linda Farnsworth-Hutching, our guest this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you would like to jump in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. And we've been talking a bit about different ideas of how the borough might raise revenue, if that's something that the next administration feels is necessary. Some different things that are being looked at, one of those being a proposition that will be on the fall ballot. Another thing on the fall ballot, of course, is Proposition 1. That's the cannabis question, whether or not in the borough, outside of the borough cities, there should be a cannabis industry. There's already an industry in place. And I guess we'll just open it up right there. What do you think of this question? Do you have a notion of how you're going to vote on this one?
Well, first of all, I live in the city of Soldotna, so I won't be voting
on
it.
So that answers that one.
Right. But you know what? I think everybody ought to sit back and look at that. All of the people that are not in incorporated cities need to look at the fact that who is going to be in control of the cannabis industry so you can leave it unregulated and have the criminal element in charge, or you can have it controlled. And so I think that's the real question that people need to ask. I don't smoke marijuana. I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't vape. But I have friends that do all three. I have friends that use cannabis for medical purposes. And, you know, like I said, it's not something that I will be voting on, but I think that people really need to stop and think about who they want in control of cannabis.
So what I'm hearing is an opinion that's in favor of a regulated market.
Yes.
Relative to what would be there otherwise.
Yes.
And certainly what would be there otherwise and what has been there otherwise in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I guess either way, however it goes, your Alinda Farnsworth Hutchings administration would have to deal with it. Is that something as a new industry that you would feel like there's a lot of, do you feel like there's a lot of potential there and something that should be sort of, you know, there are other things that we really point to and support a lot. You know, we're big fans of industry here on the Kenai Peninsula with good reason. Here's another sort of more homegrown industry. Is that something that the borough should also be getting its weight behind to the degree that it can and should? Yeah.
Well, I think just like any industry, you know, the borough should support. But I mean, there are more industries out there. There's, if we had better internet coverage, my goodness, what we could do. It would be amazing.
You know, that's an interesting question because we've heard recently, and we've had a couple of stories on it here at KDLL, that ACS, Alaska Communication Systems, is rolling out some higher speeds. And I'm sure that the reaction that I'm seeing from Linda here in the studio is not an uncommon reaction. But people have been waiting for faster internet here for a long, long time, and it's not going to be here anytime soon. But well, let's fast forward a little bit to maybe when we have caught up and folks can have that reliable high-speed access that enables them to communicate in high-tech ways all across the world. This is kind of a bigger sort of development question, but again, how much should the borough focus on bringing those sorts of, is it bringing sort of like new tech jobs in? Is it, what kind of things should the borough look forward to as we usher in some more technology to the peninsula?
Well, just look at your agriculture that has started up here, but it helps to have good internet coverage to ship out your peonies for your vegetables. I mean, those are important things, but you need good internet access. And I know just from a business point, you know, for years and years, we had our own IBM server in our building and with a T1 line to the Glacier store. And we were quick. Soon as we touched that key, it was done. I sit there in my office now and I'm on an ASP and I'll be sitting there just going along fine. And all of a sudden it just stops. And I will tell you, nothing is more frustrating than your writing a check or trying to get payroll computed, and you have to sit there and wait for the internet to do its thing.
And it just spins and spins and spins, and you go, oh, I guess now's as good a time as any to take a lunch break.
There you go.
Linda Farnsworth Hutchings again joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. 690-1687 is the question, or is the number rather, 690-1687. If you have a question, we'd love to hear from you this morning. And we're talking a little bit about development and sort of maybe the future of the Kenai Peninsula and how we move forward. I'm curious because I'm looking back at last week at Chamber of Commerce joint luncheon meeting where we had a big report from the McDowell Group out of Anchorage talking about the oil and gas industry's impact here on the Kenai Peninsula, and it's a huge impact. We're quite reliant on that, and I'm curious, thinking about all these things, you talked about agriculture, we talked about the marijuana question, some of these different industries, what's your general idea about how diversified the borough's economy ought to be? I mean, I know that there's not necessarily a ton that a borough mayor can do. You're not going to snap your fingers and introduce a new economy in overnight. Certainly that's not what's going to happen, but some of the things maybe that a Hutchings administration might advocate for and see passed could be the groundwork for future things, and what should that future sort of look like?
Well, I think what we have to do is be aware that, yes, we do have an incredible oil and gas industry. We also have an incredible tourism industry that can be expanded upon. We have our fisheries, whether it's sport, personal use, or commercial. And those are all things that, you know, instead of having any animosity between any of these groups. Everybody needs to sit down. There's room for everybody at the table. And I think that that's a huge item that we need to address. And I sit there and I look at our advertising. You know, in a lot of states, you have a huge advertising component to get people to come to your state. Our state doesn't do that. We have, for the Kenai Peninsula, the Kenai Tourism and Marketing, which is doing a good job, but everybody says, oh, we shouldn't give them money because it's not doing anything for us. And I'm sitting there thinking, people do not realize how much sales tax comes from those tourists. And even though our business is not tourist per se, you know, we don't have fishing guides, we don't have rooms to rent or whatever, but just what comes through our quick loop, and I look, we have every one of those tickets, and I look at how many are out of state, how many are out of Anchorage, and I'm thinking, these are people that would not come here if it wasn't for those flyers and those pamphlets that are sent out to all of these people so they can see what we have on the Kenai Peninsula.
You know, that's a good way to get into some of the things that we hear on an annual basis, it seems, when we're talking about the borough budget, especially. You're talking about tourism and marketing and those sorts of things. The Kenai Peninsula Tourism Marketing Council is, of course, funded in part by the borough government. And that's a question, again, that comes up every year. And I guess we'll throw that one out there. There's always this question of non-departmentals, and those have been sort of recategorized as outside the department spending. It's been recategorized to get away from that name, but those programs still exist. Some of that funding still exists. The assembly has taken away some of that funding for some of those programs, I believe CARTS this year. But again, just sort of in broad terms, what are your thoughts on that? Because again, that's a debate that we hear every year. So that's a question that you would have to certainly address as mayor, and how do you address that?
Well, the thing is that definitely Kenai Tourism and Marketing is something that needs to be there. I mean, how else are we going to let people know that we exist and what wonderful fisheries and campgrounds? I mean, it's just unbelievable what's in their magazines and their books and the trails that we have. And, you know, the peninsula is becoming a year-round destination, not just a summer destination. And so I'm looking forward to seeing their new flyer that comes out that even highlights the winter sports and what we have going on. So that's one thing I just cannot see going away. And I would hope that the assembly would understand that too, because that is a direct impact into their sales tax that is used to fund schools.
Do you see the mayor's role as being something, being a role where there is a lot of, I guess for lack of a better term, a lot of lobbying the assembly for certain things? Is that part of the job?
I would say I don't like to use the word lobby. I like to use the word educate and show them, I mean, in black and white, how it works.
Numbers are it for you.
Numbers are it for me.
Well, I'm glad they're it for you. Numbers were never my forte. I'm much better behind the mic, although that's open to opinion as well. Linda Farnsworth Hutchings joining us on the Kenai Conversation this morning. If you have a question and would like to hop in on the talk, we'd love to hear from you. 690-1687 is the question. Again, 690-1687. And Linda, as we're talking, I'm hearing essentially someone who likes the idea of more dollars coming in, a bit more development, more services provided, more things to support the folks who are here already, of course. And so in that vein, I'm wondering, again, as someone who has been here for a long, long time, something else that I also hear is that we're sort of developed enough. You know, you look at the peninsula and it's, you know, we're what, 50, 60,000 people. And some folks think that's quite plenty. I guess, how would you approach folks like that who think we're where we need to be? It's enough's enough. We're where we need to be already.
So the Kenai Peninsula Borough is about the size of West Virginia. Wonder what their population is.
Considerably higher.
Right. So the thing is, you know, I've heard this over the years many, many times. I've had new people come in and they say, I just wish they'd just shut the door so nobody else could come in. And I said, well, what would have happened if the door had been shut before you came in? So I think that we should embrace the new people that come to town. They offer so much. I've lived in other places, and I always think about how diverse we are, because we have, with the oil companies and with the educators and now with our world-class hospitals, we have educated people with a lot of vision coming into our area to share that vision. I think we should embrace it.
Yeah, that's interesting. A couple of months ago, there was a meeting sponsored by the Rotary Club of Soldotna, and you were at that meeting. And the focus of that meeting was, again, this idea of future development and the notion that as we rely on oil and gas industry now, maybe that's not what we're going to be reliant on in the future necessarily for a long, long time. Same with fisheries, though that's, you know, a big part of the economy now. It might not always be there. And so how can we plan ahead? How can we sort of lay the groundwork? Coming out of that meeting, what were some of your thoughts? Because a lot of that meeting was, again, how to attract young people and bring new talent in, for sort of lack of a better term, not that there's no lack of talent here now, but to sort of keep that wheel going. What were your thoughts coming out of that meeting and some of those ideas?
Well, you know, I was very interested in that meeting. And again, the first thing that came up was our internet capability. That was really right. The big thing. But the other thing that I think was interesting, and I don't think people realize, what have we got? Approximately 700 employees with the medical field. And we now have the opportunity to give the education to the young people so that they can come back and work in our hospitals and in our doctor's offices. And, you know, I have a granddaughter that is looking forward to completing her education so she can come back here to work as a physical therapist. So the thing is that she says she lived in Arizona last year, spent the summer in Wisconsin, and she's in Utah going to school right now. But she said, I can hardly wait to come home. She says, this is the only place to live. And so I think that those are the kind of things that we're looking for. We're looking for the fact that our children can learn and still be able to come back to a good job.
There is an interesting role that the borough plays in that sort of thing. And it's something that the borough hasn't played a huge role into this point. And I'm kind of going a long way around. Just follow with me here. The idea that as development takes place, you know, this has always been kind of a frontier sort of place in a lot of homesteaders. Of course, your family homesteaded here. And it was, you had to do what you had to do to get by. And that was sort of it, right? And now, as we do face more development, more and more people are impacted by that development. And sometimes it's things that they don't necessarily like to see. And for a long, long time, planning and zoning has been kind of a four-letter word within the borough. And I think to a great degree, it still is. I'm curious, again, just sort of in broad terms, what your thoughts are on planning and zoning. What sort of a role does that play? How should it be applied? To what degree should it be applied so that folks can maintain that lifestyle that they moved to? The person that you were talking about, sort of hypothetically, that moves here and says, that's it, close the doors, they want to maintain that lifestyle. How do you maintain that balance? Is it even possible to maintain that balance?
Well, you know, I have friends that say that, you know, I moved up here, this is the last frontier, I don't want planning and zoning, and that's fine as long as you're not living in one of the incorporated areas. And the people I feel bad for are the ones that buy their 5 acres and build their nice big home, and then there's a wrecking yard next door. So I guess you have to make up your mind. Do you want planning and zoning, or do you want to have the freedom, or what you figure is a freedom? It's always amazing to me. Somebody says, well, I don't have to chain up my dog if I don't live in the city, and I can shoot my gun if I don't live in the city. And I'm thinking, yeah, but I wonder what your neighbor feels, you know, but that's just it. The borough does not have those planning and zoning powers, and they would have to change the class of borough they are, which would be a vote of the people. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Certainly no big changes like that on the horizon. Well, we are coming up on the bottom of the hour, and I need a quick refill of coffee, but I want to throw the number out there one more time. If you have some questions, would like to get in on the second half of the Kenai conversation this morning. We're speaking with Linda Farnsworth Hutchings. She is a candidate for Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. Lots we've talked about so far, lots more coming up. Stay with us. The Dave Brubeck Quartet keeping you company there. I've got some fresh coffee, and we are ready to go for the second half of the Kenai conversation this morning here on KDLL. Linda Farnsworth Hutchings is the guest. She is running for Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. And of course, Linda, you were on that ballot with two other fellas, Charlie Pierce and Dale Bagley, also running. And I'm curious a little bit about how the campaign's going to this point.
I feel that it's going very well. I'm enjoying it, but I'm a social person, so this is probably right up my alley.
And there has been one candidate for him so far down in Funny River. And last week when Dale was on the program, we asked him a little bit about that. But what were some of your feelings going, I guess maybe going into that and coming out of it? Were there any changes? Did it open your eyes to some things or concerns that folks have?
It did open my eyes to a couple of concerns, and one of them was the fact that Funny River didn't have their ambulance anymore. That was a topic of conversation, which when I had it researched, it was being repaired. And even when it comes back, there is not a qualified person to drive the vehicle, I guess, or travel with the patient because they have to be a certain level, and there are not any of those on the volunteer basis.
Yeah, and that's an I don't want to say it's a problem necessarily, because all across the peninsula there are plenty of volunteers and men and women who give tons of time for those sorts of causes. But is that something that you feel would be something to focus on and work on with an administration?
I think so. I would like to, you know, I've worked well with CES before, and I don't know if you are aware, but I was on the healthcare task force for the borough three times, actually, three different mayors. And this last one, I feel, accomplished a couple of items. And one of them was to put forth the safety corridor, we call it, from Cooper Landing to Turnagain Arm, because right now there is no ambulance service in that. And the fact is that you can only expect so much of your volunteers. I mean, when it takes you 8 hours to make a run, if you're in Cooper Landing, and then you have a job, it's a little hard to accomplish. And then you have to have a certain level of training. So I'm hoping that to be able to work with CES and work out all the little, you know, wrinkles we have, that we can get this accomplished so that all of our areas can be covered and not have it be a large financial impact.
You mentioned working with healthcare task forces under three different borough mayors, and I was not aware of that, but that's a very interesting sort of perspective to have, and I'm curious about your thoughts on how the healthcare scene has sort of evolved and changed over the years on the Kenai Peninsula and where you would like to see it go.
Well, it has certainly evolved, because my parents were involved in that first shovel of dirt that they lifted up for the hospital. I spent hundreds and hundreds of hours volunteering at that hospital when it was first built, because we didn't have enough staff, nursing staff. So the hospital auxiliary was a group of about 20 women, and we split up our time and we did what we could do for the community. And, you know, it has grown, it has evolved. We have an incredible hospital now with world-class doctors. And just like I was speaking to a gentleman the other day, he says, I wouldn't go anywhere else for my joints, because he said, I can get it done here. But we have oncology. We're almost up and running, I believe, in the cardiac unit. I mean, you can't do better. And on top of that, you can have babies here, which you can't in Seward.
Very important to note that one. And so the sense that I'm getting is that some of the expansions that have been made and the new services that can be offered, those are a good thing, and there should be more of that?
I do think so. And, you know, that brings to mind another thing. I sat on the Workers' Comp Board for the state of Alaska for 11 years. And one of our jobs was developing regulations to reduce the workers' comp premium to employers so they could, you know, afford their insurance. And we took tours around the state talking to injured workers and to employers. So we did town hall meetings. But the big part of that was when we did our fee schedule, and we had to develop a program so that we could compare all the hospitals in the state. And our hospital came in as the most reasonably priced in the whole state. So that was big to me. And the other thing, for the quality of care that we have, that is phenomenal.
Were there things that were attributable to that low cost?
I think it's because we're very cost conscious, and we don't want to be priced out of the market. We're a not-for-profit. So even if we make money, we roll it back into the facilities rather than paying it out in bonuses like some of the hospitals do.
And a headline that's been out very, very recently about the hospital, well, I guess not that recently, when budgets were being worked out earlier this summer, the big number that we saw was a pretty dramatic drop in revenue over the same point last year for the hospitals, you know, into the 90% range. And is that something that's a cause for concern? Because that's a big number. And for folks who don't necessarily follow day-to-day and understand the intricate workings of healthcare finance and the sort of, well, the mess that it can be, that can look like a scary number. But what are your thoughts on seeing, I guess, a phenomenon like that?
Well, I don't get upset about that phenomenon, as you call it. There are a number of things that we had taken care of during this last year, and one of them was quite a robust accounting and patient record system that ties in with the other docs that are in your area. So that was a huge outlay. We also knew that there were going to be some real big changes with the fact that the way the federal government was now paying us and how insurance companies were going to pay us. So things are bundled like they hadn't necessarily been before. But the thing is that we had ample reserves. And at the last meeting, when the CEO, Rick Davis, provided us with information, he says that has leveled off and is starting to creep back up to where we're going to be fine.
Yeah. So confidence that the Central Peninsula Hospital didn't even have to think about it. That kind of leads into again this idea of how things are going to progress and sitting on those healthcare task forces over the years. You're talking about how the federal government plays into this and sitting on those healthcare task forces over the years. To what degree, I guess, do you pay attention to how those federal changes affect us, or do they affect? I mean, certainly they do affect us here on the Kenai Peninsula and at the hospital, but how much does that play into the decisions that are made and the conversations that are had for planning out, you know, 10, 20 years down the line?
Well, I think the people that we have in place right now are looking at that all the time, and they have monthly meetings with the borough mayor, and the administrative staff that they have to work with, so that they are sitting there going over all of these pieces of information all the time. So it's not surprises that we see, because there's somebody with it all the time.
Somebody with it all the time. And this gets back to your idea of having quality, you know, quality personnel and well-qualified people in those positions to help make those decisions. I guess, what are some of your philosophies? You've mentioned doing a lot of hiring over the years and being on that side of things in the business world. What sorts of those things translate into government work and administering services in the borough?
Well, I haven't only just been in the private sector. I've sat on a number of boards and commissions that are not profit or, how do I want to put this? You know, it's government, but it's not running the borough. But since I've had all of this experience in different sections of it, it's not something new. It's not something I'm afraid of, and I'm not afraid to ask questions.
Something that we hear a lot, you know, when we're at borough meetings, when I'm at borough meetings, because I get to go to all of those, we hear a lot that this idea that the borough ought to run more like a business. And there are certainly some points to be made in that regard, but at the end of the day, a government isn't a business exactly. There are, you know, two different functions and two different reasons for existing. But on that basic question, when you hear folks try to boil things down like that, what are your thoughts? Is it something that we should really be looking toward the efficiencies that businesses have to have in order to exist? Are those things applicable at the borough level?
Well, I think they're applicable at the borough level, but the thing is you still cannot give up your services, but there might be just something as simple as a person that you have working in a certain department that doesn't have enough to do. So they can pick up some of the work from another department. So there are just efficiencies that you can accomplish. And I think if you have good, qualified help, you don't have this problem. And they understand that. I mean, they're not there to be government or spend all the money. They're there to do their job as well as can be expected.
Yeah, that's interesting. And do you think the sense that I'm getting as we're having this conversation is that it, you don't feel that maybe it's particularly difficult to recruit good people for those positions.
No, I don't think it's as difficult as some people think it is. But like I said, I interview. I make sure that I really look at that person. I'm not hiring a friend to fill a slot. I'm looking at the qualified person. If that qualified person is already there, you don't get rid of them.
Yeah, that's something that you mentioned again in your candidate statement, which can be found on the Kenai Peninsula Borough website. This idea of friends in different positions, and is that something you've seen in the past that has maybe kind of rubbed you the wrong way a little bit? I'm seeing a little smile.
Well, I have seen it in the past, and you know, I don't think that's how you run a good, efficient government.
And that coming, I guess, from a long-term resident perspective.
Well, and I'm looking at it also at the state level, because I have worked, like I said, for workers' comp for 11 years, so I have seen that happen as well. And it's sad when you see good people replaced with people that really have no idea what that job entails.
Talking about some of your experience working at the state level, I'm curious, you know, state revenues are down, of course, pretty dramatically, and some of that revenue sharing money is a lot of it has gone away. And what we hear a lot is the idea that here on the borough, a lot more of the burden, so to speak, is going to have to be picked up and carried locally. And is that something that you agree with?
Well, I don't think it makes any difference whether I agree with it or not. The state will give us what they will give us, and that's it. You're going to have to work within that budget.
Does it have to be, when state revenues go down like this, though, does it have to be necessarily a roadblock to providing the services you want to provide and accomplishing the goals that you want to accomplish?
I hope not. That's why I say I'm a numbers person. I can sit there and I can look outside the box for the right way to handle the situation.
When you say you're a numbers person, going through the budget again, and I do numbers sort of the best that I can. I didn't go to accounting classes or anything like that. But when you're looking at these budgets and questions pop up, is that something that you think a borough mayor should be sort of out on the front edge of, sort of communicating what those numbers are, what those numbers really mean? Because again, looking at something like the hospital, you see a big number like that, and it can be kind of scary for folks, and they think, well, something has to be done. This huge number exists, and something's happening. And what's the role of the borough mayor to sort of communicate those numbers and what they mean and how they affect people?
Well, you know, I'm a big proponent of town hall meetings, although lately town hall meetings have not been quite as informative because you can't get the information out for the shouting and the screaming. But the thing is just take the hospital for an example. Even though they might be showing that big loss right now, they have the reserves. That loss has stopped because it was for an expense that needed to be put out there. The system needed to be purchased. But the other thing that people don't really think about, they say, oh, you know, it's our money. We're spending our tax dollars. You're not. There's what, less than 0.01%, and that percentage is only used to do the audit annually. We are not paying that hospital. They are paying their way.
Talking to Linda Farnsworth Hutchings this morning on the Kenai Conversation, getting into the final portion of the program. If you have a question, would like to get in on the conversation, we would love to hear from you. 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. And Linda, the ground we've covered today, it's been great. And I'm something that I sort of keep coming back to, and I come back to this with anyone I speak with who is sort of works in that borough government world, and this kind of idea of development and how things ought to look. What are some changes that you can point to, maybe that have been either particularly good or maybe not so good in your time in the borough?
Well, considering in my time in the borough, you went from nothing to
right.
Everything we have right now, I would say it's done a great job. But, you know, it's just like, let's talk about the office building that they're in. The very first office building was in my mother's accounting office. We had some extra space on one side of the lobby, and she had the other side because that's what she was. She was an accountant. She did accounting for a number of people, small businesses as well as individuals. I can't tell you how many hundreds of tax returns she did every year. But the borough had no building. We had a borough, but there was no place to go. So Mother rented this couple of offices, and we had the phone on the desk. And when the phone would ring, we would answer it, Soldotna Bookkeeping or Kenai Peninsula Borough. If it was for the borough, we slid this little door open, handed it to our borough clerk, who at that time was Francis Brimer. Our borough mayor was Harold Pomeroy. But, you know, they took the fact that we had a borough. They knew we had to be able to fund the government. So they went ahead and instituted the sales tax. They knew we needed to be able to assess properties. So Harold was very good about finding the people to do this job. And I can remember, you know, maps and things laid out all over these tables as they were going through and doing their assessment. And I had the opportunity to work with a lot of these people because when Soldotna started with their first water and sewer system, in the early 70s, I would sit with these gentlemen and would compute the square footage on the lot so they could be assessed for the water and sewer. So we have come a long, long way. And personally, I like what we've accomplished.
Are there sort of borough mayors past that you look to as having been particularly good in the job and had ideas, philosophies, practices as an administrator that you can point to and say, that's sort of how I want to do it?
Well, you know, I go back to Harold. Not only was he a family friend, but he had so much history on government. And he had been the mayor of Whittier, California. Then in World War II, he ended up as the adjutant general in Berlin. And he came back to Alaska, and he was a consultant for the state of Alaska for years and years and years. But he had the foresight. He knew what a government needed to be set up as because, you know, so many of our pioneers really didn't have any government experience. They didn't understand the nuances. So he was able to lay it out very methodically so that it could be followed. And he was absolutely wonderful. The other one that I always really enjoyed visiting with was Don Gilman. He was a great guy. So, you know, these were kind of like mentors to me.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's worth pointing out, you know, is if you want to go down the list of Kenai Peninsula borough mayors of past, it's a list of all men, and the borough's never elected a woman to be mayor, and I guess it's worth maybe asking the question, does that give you a different perspective of how to come at things, or is it simply about management?
Well, I think it's about both of those. Management, definitely, but women have a different management style. And I think it comes from being moms, where you have to work with children that don't always agree, or your children and your husband don't always agree. So you're used to being the mediator. And I think that's something, instead of getting entrenched, it's my way or no way, you know, you're able to look at all sides of the question. And I think that's what I'm very good at.
You know, from time to time, some real divisive issues come up. Most recently, we can think of the invocation policy issue that came up. Going back a few years prior to that, the Anadromous Streams Ordinance came up. And these issues stir up very strong opinions, and they can really divide a room. You think, especially those borough assembly chambers, they can really divide a room. And so kind of thinking on that idea, of sort of conflict resolution and how to communicate and address some of these issues, what do you bring to the table sort of in those terms in asking those hard questions of the community and sort of facilitating a dialogue a little bit?
Well, you know, just I guess the easiest way to explain it is that you should never go into a room thinking that you're going to get it all. You have to understand that baby steps work really, really well, and then maybe tomorrow you take another baby step. But you work your way to the program, and then maybe they can see that they can go ahead and support you because it isn't black over here and white over here. It's this gray area that we can all work in.
And is that, you know, something I wanted to bring up? You've mentioned your work with the auto group, with the car dealership, and that's something as we kind of wind down the program here a little bit. That's an industry that really has to figure out how to weather some storms. And on the Kenai Peninsula, we're no strangers to some of those sort of financial storms. And some years are great, some years are not so great, and sometimes those not so great years turn into trends, and you got to get used to it. Sometimes those great years turn into trends, and it's hard to relinquish that when it stops. What sort of, I guess, how does that translate your experience at the dealership to the borough level and sort of making sure that that all levels out a little bit sort of at the end of the day?
And I think that, again, goes back to you keep good employees in a place and then you work with them. And it's not that you, we all know that you have ups and downs and everything, but the fact that you can be resilient enough to deal with it. And I think that's what I have proven.
And do you see that resiliency existing, I guess, sort of politically on the assembly? Is it, or maybe more broadly than the assembly, that there are folks out there who can be on that body and sort of make those decisions?
I think there are, you know, and I love seeing new blood come onto the assembly. Sometimes I think we kind of get stuck. And people say, well, I don't really want to run for office. You know, I want my vacation time. I want this, I want that. And I'm sitting there going, it never, ever changes unless you make the effort and you step up. It's not always going to be fun, but that's what I saw with my parents. They were so invested in this community that my mother was 82 before she went off the hospital board. And it was only because she was losing her vision. She says, otherwise I'd still be there, you know. So it's, somebody has to do it. And I feel like I'm the right person for it because I can listen to the whole question. I can listen to all the respective answers, and I think I can make a good choice.
Something as we round out just the last few minutes of the program here that I have asked and will ask the rest of the candidates. Should you find your way into that building on Binkley Street in the mayor's office, what are you most looking forward to?
Working with the employees and keeping this borough steady and stable.
And finally, when you're out in the community, I'm sure you run into people all the time, and they're asking you many of the same questions I have asked you. I'm sure you get them all the time, but I'm sure there's also kind of a little elevator speech. And just as we, again, as we close out the program, I would love to give you a couple minutes just to lay your elevator speech on us and why you should be the Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor.
Well, I think I should be Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor because I am a great manager. I have worked in and around this community from Seward all the way to Homer my whole life. I am invested in it. My family's invested in it. And I just think I'm the right choice. I listen. You can count on me. So vote for me on October 3rd.
Linda Farnsworth Hutchings joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. Linda, I want to thank you so much for coming in this morning. Thanks for the talk. It was great.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in this morning. This has been KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm Shaylin Cochran. Of course, you can catch the entirety of the program on our website, kdll.org, a little bit later today. Have a great morning.